Hey guys, I'm here to tell you about Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio, on-demand news, talk, and more for your mobile phone or pad. Stitcher brings radio and podcast listeners a better way to listen to their favorite shows and helps them discover new content by delivering personalized audio streams on demand right to your smartphone. How did I get here as non-Stitcher with over 5,000 other shows? Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, or any of the pads. Stitcher is smart radio. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Now let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host, welcome to the show. I have a great show for you today. The Mastersons are here. Their record, Good Luck Charm, comes out today, July 8th, 2014 on New West Records. The album was produced by the great Jim Scott, and Chris and Eleanor stopped by back in May. I met them at the Steve Poltz show, and he put us together, so big thank you to Steve Poltz for helping me set this up. And Chris and Eleanor came by. We sat down and talked. It was a fantastic conversation. They gave me this record back then. I've been listening to it since then. I love it. I have a favorite song on there. I'll tell you right now, it's called Uniform. So when you pick up the album, you listen to the song Uniform, you'll know I love it. It was produced by the amazing Jim Scott, who has done countless amazing albums. They have been on tour this summer so far, opening for and being a part of Steve Earle and the Duke. So they play with Steve Earle. They've been out on the road. They have a great story together, and they have great individual stories, and they're a great time to talk to you. So sit back and get ready to enjoy this conversation. And also, if you're listening to this and you're remotely touched by what they do, get on the iTunes or get to the record store that probably sells records, if there are still record stores that sell records, and get Good Luck Charm. It is fantastic, okay? Amazing, amazing album. So congratulations to Chris and Eleanor for putting that record out today. Get out there, support the Mastersons, do it. Before we get to this conversation, let me tell you what's going on with me. Tonight's a big night, my second night of my residency over at Strange Brew. I have Graham Wilkinson and Daisy playing with me. Last week went well. As you know, I told you, I had a good time. A lot of people came. And looking forward to tonight. Looking forward to the rest of them. They're all going to be great. Except for, of course, on July 29th, it isn't going to be a regular show. I will just be opening for Steve Poltz that night, who, of course, I should give co-production to for this podcast for booking it. So, So this weekend was great, 4th of July. I don't know what you guys did 4th of July. I actually went to a wedding. My friend Joe G got married. Zuri and I went. We got dressed up. We went out to the lake. We saw fireworks. We saw them get married. It was a beautiful thing. And Saturday, I played at 1-to-1 Bar with Skyrocket. A great show. It was a great time. We played a kind of a complicated song off the cuff without ever rehearsing it, which kind of shocks me because we do spend a lot of time on songs sometimes in rehearsal. As I would say, they incubate for a while before we bring them out to the people. And then randomly you get a text on a Saturday like, hey, let's do My Love by McCartney. Anyone know it? Yeah, I know it. Everyone else turns out they knew it. Shit kicked it off. 1, 2, 3, 4, bang. And if I go away, rock and roll. It was great. It made the guy that we dedicated it to and his wife for their anniversary, great songwriter guy named David Rice, made him cry. So there you go. Maybe sometimes it's nice to do stuff off the cuff. You don't know if you're going to be able to pull it off. But luckily, we're all seasoned enough musicians that when put in that situation, we can pull it off. Sunday, Zuri and I spent an entire day just chilling out, in complete chill out mode. And yesterday, I actually did 3 podcast interviews. I got Jess Klein in here, fantastic songwriter. She's got a new album out called Learning Faith. You should check that out. And Sarah Hauser from her band Lowen, and a new band called Gobi, pop band, electronica. So did a lot of that stuff. And then I went on Access TV last night on my friend Dave Pruitt's show. He's had shows on Access TV since the late 80s, and I've watched them since I moved here in 1991, and I've been on them since like 1992. And it was interesting going back there, going to the Access TV studios. You know, I had him on a few months ago. You can look it up, because I wondered what happened to Access TV, because with the advent of YouTube And with the advent of iMovie, people got much higher quality stuff and were able to get it out to more people faster than having an actual show on Access. And I'm wondering, are people out there watching Access? It was interesting being there. It was neat being there because when I first started going on out there, Dave Pruitt didn't have kids. And last night, his kids are like late teens and they're filming. They're the actual camera guys, Matt and Ryan. That was really, it was hysterical. Everyone was really sweet. Everyone was very nice. They still have a TV studio over there. Still people in there doing stuff all the time, doing production. And it's still black in there. It's all black. Anyway, I had a great time hanging with my friend Dave. Got a chance to talk to him. Got to tell a great story about my old friend ER Shorts and that stuff. And promote the show, promote the podcast, promote the show tonight. So, yeah, if you're in Austin, come out to Strange Brew, 8 p.m., Daisy, 8:30, me, 9 o'clock, Graham Wilkinson. Great night of music. All right? There's more to come. I'm doing this until September, till Jeff Plankenhorn comes back. I'm excited. I'm having a great time. I got great people on the bill next week, AJ Vallejo and Kendall Beard. Okay? I'm going to stop promoting stuff, and I'm going to get to this conversation with Chris Masterson and Eleanor Whitmore from the Mastersons. All right, when we first did this, their record was initially to come out on June 17th, but there were some manufacturing issues, and it ended up pushing it back to July 8th. So a couple times in there, maybe we say June 17th, but really what they mean is today, July 8th, 2014. Get out there, buy this record, Good Luck Charm. I can't tell you how much I listen to it. I am in love with it, and I think that they're amazing, and get out there, buy the album. Go out there and see them if you can. Get out there, and if you got tickets to go see Steve Earle and the Dukes, go early and see the Mastersons. All right? Here we go. Let's talk to Chris and Eleanor. Let's get down. Microphones, just talking and getting used to hearing my voice.
Right.
And I alter it a little bit, I think.
Came like as like 280 podcasts in. Do you think it sounds different now if you listen?
No, when I listened to the very beginning, I didn't want to offend anyone by being as goofy as I am, so it all sounds like NPR, and I'm like, hey, this is Johnny, this is a show. And I had people that would write me and go like, man, you sound like this is the worst time you're ever having in your life. So then I just went to be myself, and then I noticed that my voice is squeakier when I'm excited, so I have to sort of temper it a little bit. Chris, let me ask you a question. This is going to be the first question of the whole thing. Can I hire you as a stylist?
Thank you.
Because I just went through like your Facebook pictures, and I was like, God, every day this guy is just... Even when there's like a couple pictures where you're just like in a t-shirt and jeans, totally awesome. Like today, great boots. Eleanor, thanks. You as well, but I don't want to dress like a lady.
I understand.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
We used to share jeans for a long time.
You did?
When I was younger.
Yeah, when we first started. One of our first dates, we both were like trying on the same pairs of jeans, shopping.
You went shopping for one of your first dates?
Yeah.
Where?
We actually went to the like citywide garage sale, I think.
No, but it was like, right? it was at the Palmer events. It's not the...
Yeah, that's a citywide.
But they do. It was all the clothing stores. It's like a more garage sale or something like right. that. This is like.
How did you guys meet? Did you guys meet here in town? You live here, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We met at a festival in Colorado, and I was playing with this guy, Jack Ingram. And
yeah.
She was playing with Susan Gibson, and there was this like sort of bad after party that neither one of us really wanted to be at.
Right.
And we were like cowering in the corner and. You know, some days it pays to be a wallflower.
Yeah, and that's how you met. What did you, like? What was did Chris have a line, or did Did you have like a smooth line to like work it over?
I don't really remember. I think we were both kind of cowering at the party, and then like there were some instruments that came out, and like he heard me play, and like, I don't know, we just kind of...
No, she had a boyfriend at the time. She kind of dropped that card.
I had to tell him that pretty quickly, but then I just came home and broke up with a boyfriend, and here we are.
Wow. Was it because of Chris you broke up with him, or that was already kind of going?
It was already in the works. Yeah. It was already in the works.
Chris was kind of the straw.
Yeah. He was the catalyst. So.
So I'm fascinated, A, with relationships, and B, with how people work and maintain a relationship. You guys have like... The couple of times I've seen you, you have a magic kind of together on stage. Not kind of, but you do. There's obviously, I'm not the only person that thinks that. But how does that, I mean, how do you keep stuff separated? That's what I wonder. It's one big blur of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're together all the time. We like very rarely have a moment apart, which is good most of the time. And other times it's pretty challenging. We're both pretty bullheaded and strong-willed about things and our opinions musically and otherwise. And so definitely makes it challenging sometimes when we're writing or, you know, just even trying to get through our to-do list.
Well, I mean, the easiest, you know, that like the interview question, the quick bullet point would be like the greater the level of intimacy, the lower the level of professionalism. And it's like, we treat those we love in a different way. And it's, it can be a good thing and a bad thing, you know, when you're trying to get something done.
But that's really interesting that the higher the level of intimacy, the lower the level of professionalism.
Yeah,
absolutely. If we all went on a tour, you hired us, and we were like playing your songs and we got in a van, we would be like polite and, you know, in tune and on time and all those things that you try to do when you, you know, respect your job and want to get called back. But when it's the two of us, it's like the stuff that flies back and forth. I mean, and sometimes like outside of radio stations, it's like, oh yeah, well, fuck you. Oh yeah, well, okay, let's go. I can fake this. Like we could have just had a big blowout in the car and you wouldn't even know it.
Well, that's weird. It's her birthday.
We didn't today. No.
But he's on his best behavior.
I'm so glad you guys are here. All right, so I was listening to... What's the name of your first album? I'm going to say Birds Fly South.
Yep.
I was listening to that this weekend. I went to Houston and came back, and I actually listened to it also while I was running. And then I was reading in your bio today that the new album is a more collab, because that album does definitely have, like... It's obviously a band, but it seems like you have songs and you have songs.
Right.
And that's the way it was approached then. Who produced that record?
We kind of all did. We made it here at George Reef's studio.
One of my favorite guys.
Yeah, and we've played a lot of music with George and our drummer, Falcon Valdez. And
Steve Christensen was engineering and mixed the record. And so it was kind of a collective. We just figured if we got like a odd number of people together that they could like
kind of have a tiebreaker. I mean, we knew what we wanted to do. We had the pile of songs, and you know, we spend so much time as, you know, on other people's gigs, we kind of knew what we wanted to play, but it was just having a, you know, some other ears in the room that we trusted on that first record,
right? And that was definitely George's. He's amazing.
Yeah.
He really is. He's not my... just as a bass player, as a guy, as a
A pastry
producer.
Chef.
As a pastry chef, yeah, I know. I know. I kind of would like to be on, I guess he doesn't really pastry chef very much, does he?
No.
Keeps that at bay these days.
Yeah.
Keeps it. Did you bake anything while you guys were recording? Did you do it at his house?
We did it at his house. No, George is really finicky about using the kitchen too much while he's recording.
Have you made a record or done any work over at his
place? I did. I went and played on someone's record. I spent a day there with him and Scrappy.
He's got this, you know, he lives in a home, but it's the studio is taken over. And he hasn't really come to terms with that, I don't think.
No. It's funny, here I have there's definitely like a line.
Right.
It's like, what's that movie that kind of mirrors South Africa? District 9, where they keep all the... This is where I keep all the music stuff. There's like a line here. Nothing.
And we do this kind of the same thing. Like our living room, there's not... I don't even want a guitar case, a cable, nothing. Like we have a hi-fi and you know, these red couches and that's it. Like, but George, you know, he he put a console in his house, and he and it's there's it's wired. Every room's wired, and you know, I was making a record that I was producing for her sister Bonnie, and we had to ISO. We had to put the B3 or the Leslie in his bed in the master bedroom, and it's like, sorry, dude, you know, it's like you said yes to this session, like, and he was getting all like, you know, kind of how George gets, you know, just tweaking out a little bit. Man, I don't know, you know, and
yeah. You made him nervous. But, so Bonnie is your sister, and she plays bass with you guys sometimes?
She does. She plays bass with us, and then she writes her own songs and plays bass with other people and does whatever she... She's a hustler.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever met her.
Well,
I don't think I met you guys.
You probably haven't, or you would remember. Bonnie is like the polar opposite of me. We both look a lot alike, so people get us confused sometimes. But she's really boisterous and, well, she's wonderful. She's very memorable. You would remember her.
Well, maybe I'll get to meet her sometime.
Yeah.
Okay, and you guys are getting ready to go out on tour for your album?
Yeah.
Or what?
Well, this first thing in June, we have a month with Steve Earle.
Okay, great.
And so we'll be out, you know...
We play in his band.
Yes.
Maybe.
And then we open the shows too, so it's a
so you're
nice going to
be opening these shows as well. That's so great that
double
he does
dipping.
That. Yeah, double dipping.
Yeah.
So the record comes out June 17th.
Yes. And it is called Good Luck Charm.
Yeah.
That's right.
Not hashtag Good Luck Charm one word, but that's what it says on your Facebook page, and I was like, wow, they don't seem like the kind of band that would name their album a hashtag in all one word. And it wasn't, so that was good. I think maybe your publicist did this. We did this without a publicist.
What's that?
This show, like, I booked this show a lot without publicists involved, with bands that have publicists.
Yeah, we have two publicists, but...
I still...
Steve Earle is also... You have three... I'm not Steve Earle. Steve Pultz is also a publicist for you guys.
He's pretty much.
Yeah.
So you have three.
We do a lot. It's amazing how, you know... We're really lucky that we kind of have a really cool team. We have a great manager, and there's a label helping us out, but we still work our asses off.
There's the
days of the mysterious
the day of just lying around doing cocaine all day and then just running up to your show and then having an orgy afterwards are kind of over.
Yeah,
you got to do a lot of stuff, and no one wants their orgy on Instagram.
Right,
and at least I don't.
Yeah, no one gets to be like Dylan. No one gets or Nick Cave anymore. That mystery, you know, they want to know. They want a picture of your breakfast taco in the morning. You know,
how do you guys deal with that? Because it's funny, your music is not. It doesn't feel like Twitter, or you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no social media vibe in your music at all.
Thank you.
I mean, I'm waiting for your dance record. I don't know if that's like your third record, what you're going to do, but
well, I think
you know what I mean. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so organic, and you guys seem organic.
Well, thanks. You know, I think you definitely don't want to try to make art with your audience in mind. You want to just kind of be true to yourself and try to make something that is, you know, original and, you know, sounds like you and honest. And but it does kind of feel like you're running for office when you're trying to build your fan base.
Yeah.
I mean, you really do have to get on social media and talk to your fans and engage with them and stick around after the show and genuinely try to connect with them so that hopefully they will tell their friends and then you will have a few more people at your next show. You know, or sell some records. So.
But I think in creating, like, we, you know, I mean, when we get this record done, it's like, I don't know that we make records that are going to, you know, be the hottest thing on Pitchfork. And I'm really okay with that, you know, because a lot of the stuff that you know spikes or you know is trending or whatever the people say, it's like it doesn't age well.
No.
It doesn't, you know, and it
no, and that's the thing that I'm saying about your music has a timeless quality to it. You can't just listen to it and go, that was made in 1920, you know, or 1990, whatever.
I think
thank you.
2000, that's what I mean.
It is a little interesting because social media did play a little bit of a part in the writing of the record.
Really?
Ironically. The title track, Good Luck Charm, we wrote, we were home last year. We were on the road most of the year last year, but we happened to be home for a few days when the special session was happening up at the Capitol. And Senator Wendy Davis was doing her filibuster. And we went up there and we saw, you know, so many friends in our community, other musicians and, you know, family and just people that we knew up at the Capitol. And it was really inspiring. And we actually went to a Steve Pultz show that night and, you know, came back and drove by the Capitol. And it was getting really intense by that point. And, you know, there were state troopers, you know, all over the place. And so we went home and we got on Twitter and found a live feed and were able to figure out what was going on. And it was a really exciting time. And, you know, over the next few days, you know, I was home. He was out at a session and I started writing some of the verses to Good Luck Charm. And it wasn't called that yet, but I wrote a few verses down, and then Chris came home and he was like, oh, I've got the chorus.
I just had that Good Luck Charm floating around, and I just heard the verse, like, oh, I got it. I mean, in less than
and we finished minutes, it we were, like, in like 20 minutes and it was done. And you know, it's not really meant to be polarizing. It's meant to be more of a kind of
unifying, galvanizing
protest song. So that was interesting. And, you know, there's another track on the record also, Cautionary Tale, that at least makes a kind of a comment on the digital age. And
in what way?
Just kind of how it, you know, it separates us from each other. You know,
we think we have these things weird that connect us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they're not, you know, like we made the record out in L.A. and we were sitting at a bar one night, you know, one of our few nights off, and it was, you know, and it was a cool old bar, and they're spinning vinyl, and we're just kind of hanging out, like, on a little date almost. But I look down the bar, and there's, like, nine people there, yeah, all on their phones. It's, yeah, like, wow, what a great shared experience we're all having right now. Like,
no one really seems to be here now.
Mm-mm.
Right.
They're either letting everyone know that they're here now, but they're not actually being there. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, people spend a lot of time documenting their lives as opposed to... Yeah,
I do it too. I mean, I do it, and I realize it's weird.
I mean, we sort of have to. I mean, yeah, we feel like we have to, yeah, because of the band. You know, right, you try to, like, I mean, I think people seem to like that. You know, I mean,
well, there's some aspects about it that are really cool, but you know, in other ways, it's just sickening. You know, I almost want just an old flip phone or just a crappy phone, because you know, we both got watches this year just so that we could look and see what time it was instead of looking at your phone, right, and oh, yeah, I got a text, oh, what's happening on Facebook, oh, you know, and then the next thing you know, you've wasted 30 minutes on your phone before you're back to what you were originally meaning to do.
We just switched the house to the bedroom as a technology free zone too.
That is a great idea,
because I'm not like, it's weird. I mean, I'm not that well, you know, like if I get up in the morning and I use the iPhone for an alarm clock and I get an email that's really good, I'm, you know, I'm happy and excited for the day. Or if it's really bad, it just wrecks my day. And it, you know, it's not, you know, that's not a good way to start your day or end it, you know? So we try to keep those out of there, and it's been helping.
I find that I, like, alone in a hotel, that's just kind of what I do now. I just sit there and read what people say and look at the food they're eating.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a friend named Corey that told me this thing this weekend that made me cry with laughter, that he's very offended by people taking a photo of the food and then saying, like, you know, chicken breast sautéed in balsamic vinegar and red wine, and asparagus, you know, sautéed in butter with, you know what I mean, like that. Mm-hmm. He wants to take pictures of his poop and then put the list of the food that he had eaten the night before on it.
That's a pretty good idea.
Which I thought was pretty funny. So, all right, let's go. You're from Houston?
I am.
And where are you from? I'm sorry.
I'm from Denton.
Denton. But you lived somewhere before then? Or did you move to Denton when you were three?
Well, I grew up in Justin, Texas,
okay,
out west of, but kind of between Fort Worth and Denton out west. And then around junior high, my parents moved to Denton, and then I went to college in Fort Worth at TCU.
Oh, cool.
So I've spent some time up there. And
did you used to go to the Aardvark?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that place.
Many times.
Good.
And I think the last time I was there, I might have seen James McMurtry. So, you know, I've spent some time down in Austin, and then, you know, Chris and I left Texas and moved up to New York for about 5 years.
I saw that, yeah. Let's go back, because you did a lot of stuff. Like, you played with Johnny Gimble when you were just a kid?
Yeah.
When you were how old, four?
Well, I was actually 16. He was still doing the camp that he started, started in Waco, and then I think they moved it out to New Mexico after that. But I went in some of the early years, and I was actually talking to his granddaughter Emily the other day. And we figured out that we were both there at that camp at the same time, and it was really neat. They put all the advanced kids in a second class a day with him, so you basically just got to sit around with him the entire day and jam. He would we'd be like, "Oh my God, can you play the solo that you played on George Strait's Right or Wrong?" And then he would show us how he did it.
And you knew that solo when you were a kid?
Oh yeah, I mean he is one of my all time favorite fiddle players. I mean, just that man can swing and. Yeah. It was just so great. So, you know, when you are excited about playing your instrument, you know, I don't really practice and I'm not that excited about it anymore. But you know, I would go looking for, artists that my favorite fiddle players played on. And I would just kind of, you know, like a nerd, sit around and transcribe their solos. And Johnny was definitely one of those players that I studied. And so it was really... quite an amazing experience to be able to hang out with him that much. And I have a whole box of tapes of the entire week of him telling stories about being in the war.
No shit.
And just he would daydream, and I think if I
you should release him in some way.
I know.
I would love to hear that.
Yeah,
I would record it and put it on the show and pretend I talked to him.
it's pretty cool.
That's amazing. What was your social life like then at that age? If you're transcribing solos from George Strait records, you're not really hanging out and partying with the kids, are you? What was going on?
let's see. Yeah.
Did you leave that to Bonnie? Is Bonnie older or younger than
Bonnie
you?
Bonnie is younger. She is more the socialite of the family.
If either of the Whitmore girls partied, used the word party as a verb, right. It would be Bonnie.
Okay, yeah, sure. I'm starting to get that. I'm picking it up. I said I'm picking that up.
Yes, yeah. You got it.
What did you, what kind of, did you hang out with other musicians or other kids that were, was there anyone else transcribing stuff? And
I was classically trained, so, my dad is a folk singer and my mom is an opera singer. So
right.
I was always, taking lessons and stuff. But because my dad is a singer-songwriter, I was always playing by ear. And that's, how I got interested in other types of music. And, he always wanted me to play with him and his band and my sister, too. And we had a band called Daddy and the Divas. And and so I was like the weird kid in orchestra that had this like other life, like playing in bars and stuff with my
dad.
And
so cool,
but it's great. She plays violin and fiddle, and there's not a lot of players that can switch effortlessly.
A lot of my musical friends would just look at my violin with the pickup on it and be like, "Oh, can't believe you did that to your violin."
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, so I was that girl.
Wow. So then you went to Fort Worth on your own to TCU. Did you study music?
I did. Okay. I have a violin performance degree from TCU and studied classical all the way through college. But, still, played in bands during college. And, when I graduated, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this for a living. I just didn't know if I was going to be able to, support myself. And I just kind of gradually started filling up my calendar. It was like half classical gigs and half band gigs, and did that for a while. So
that's cool though. You learned how to
juggle,
how to be a pro. Yeah,
yeah. But now I only have like one classical gig left. I play like one church gig every Christmas and sometimes Easter, and just to prove that I can still read music. And
you guys religious in any way?
I'm spiritual.
Way more spiritual than religious, you know.
Yeah, the church doesn't really do much for me. I've had a few weird experiences.
Where did you grow
organized
up?
Organized religion.
Did you grow up in
mainly in Denton? And you know, my parents didn't really go to church much. But when I was in seventh grade, I remember like starting to read about like ESP and witchcraft and all this stuff. And my mom flipped out. She totally flipped. And she was like, oh, we have to all go to church now. And she took us to a Methodist church and it was super boring. And I was like, well, this sucks. And so I had a neighbor friend and his family went to a Pentecostal church and I had a crush on him. So I started going to the Pentecostal church, and then my mom really, really flipped out.
Oh,
then
yeah, she was like,
yeah, she was so upset. And I was like, well, you know, you asked me to go to church, yeah. And I'm going to pick the church that I want to go to. And that didn't last for very long for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
As soon as the gay bashing started, then I checked out.
But, oh, yeah. Those people are crazy. Sorry, yes, to anyone totally. Pentecostal listening to this podcast, which I doubt is happening. But
yeah, I
there's like one.
Yeah, there's like one guy.
Yeah, and organized religion has really let me down. I actually was in a Christian sorority for a very short time in college, and they had this huge falling out between the Catholics and the Protestants, and I had taken that semester off because I had a master class, and then it was like all these girls didn't know like which side you were on. Were you the Catholic or
like
on the Protestant 1800s?
In England,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, and I was like, this is total bullshit. And then I just started like reading, I started getting into like Eastern religion, and that's kind of, I don't know, I'm spiritual, I believe in a higher power, but not really.
You don't
sure.
know what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're not sure if he's inflicting things on us or helping us through things as we're told, which is weird.
Or she.
Or she. Then. Yeah. They don't, not a lot of people are saying she, but I do, I would not be surprised if it was he or she.
I think it would be more likely some kind of asexual power,
see?
Really.
Yeah.
You know?
But then why are we all so sexual as people?
I don't know.
Oh, this is getting weird.
Yeah, I mean, I was just, you know, it's funny. I grew up, you know, I joke that I'm a recovering Catholic.
Yeah.
And
I grew up like that too, but at least that's an exciting and dramatic church to go to.
It sort of is, but I realized from a young age, long before I had, you know, any political views or anything, I realized that I was just sort of in this, you would be around these people that acted a certain way on Sundays and acted
that's the part
different
that you,
the yeah. other 6 days. And I could never, you know, put too fine of a point on it when I was really young. But I, you know, so it's that's really, you know, I noticed that, and but then all the guilt got hammered in, you know, so it was a really shitty place to be in for a long time.
Yeah, it's weird.
And I felt that way for, you know, and then I spent a lot of years you know, kind of not taking really good care of myself and treating myself in a
bad
way.
Were you doing drugs and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all the while, as life was spinning out of control, I would curse God. And, you know, then because I was a Catholic, I felt even guiltier about that. So it just felt like I was just digging and digging and digging. And, you know, finally.
Were you playing?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how old were you when you started getting in trouble?
Well, I moved to Los Angeles when I was 17.
Okay.
Like, my parents signed me out of high school, basically. And in the state of Texas, you have to be, I think, okay. 17 to drop out.
Right, right. Well, wait, let's go back. So you're living in Houston. Are you an only child?
No, I have a younger brother.
Okay. And
a half sister and half brother that
okay.
live out west.
Where did you go to what part of Houston do you live in?
Kingwood.
Oh yeah.
Suburbia.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I lived in the Woodlands.
Yeah.
It's enemies. Mortal enemies. that's a weird place to go. And so when did you start playing and how did you start playing?
Well, my dad was a hobbyist and so there were always guitars around.
Right.
You know, and he'd played the same five songs for years, you
right,
know.
Right, right.
And so I wanted to play probably before I could even wrap my hand around a guitar neck. So I think it was about 8 years old when I could reach, you know, make a chord.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Before then, I would sit around on this little harmony guitar and act like I was playing George Jones songs along with him. And so there was always music in our house.
And it was definitely like a traditional kind of music with both of you guys then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Chris grew up in a blues scene.
I grew up listening to country and blues and folk records. Like, strange kid.
Yeah, what was going on musically around you that your friends were into?
I was just,
like Pearl Jam or some shit, and you were like, well, no, I'm not doing that.
I guess before that, I guess, you know, so I'm, you know, I'm 37, so okay, there would have been, you know, there would have been some, you know, some Kiss and some Motley Crue, you know, so that was around.
Yeah.
But I also, like, I think my folks took me to, like, a Johnny Winter gig when I was really young, and, you know, that, like, guitar playing like that just floored me.
Yeah.
And being in Houston, getting to see, you know, various songwriters play. So my mom would take me to folk gigs, and then you could go see, like, you know, I saw Albert Collins when I was really young.
Wow.
And I saw...
Where were you seeing these shows? Like at Rockefeller's?
Like Rockefeller's would have been.
Okay, yeah.
You know, like around... It seemed like around Christmas time every year Albert Collins would play. And, yeah, and then I just... So I got really into that. You know, by my early teens...
Were there guys in Houston that you were kind of checking out and playing with and stuff? Like, who were you around?
Well, you know, so my dad started taking me out to these, you know, by shows. My early teens, right. Like, well, shows, but like blues jams, because that's, you know, if you're a kid, like I didn't...
Like at the Ready Room or Edda's or...
Like Ready Room, I remember Dan Electro.
Yeah.
Evening Shadows, like Joe Guitar Hughes, like, so we go out there. What, there was the, you know, they had that place out on Richmond, Billy Blues. And
I've never been to that one.
But so when I, and that was... You know, I started to learn a lot about that. And, you know, there was a guy, this big Walter Price, this piano player.
Yeah.
You know, he had me over to his apartment and he, you know, kind of showed me stuff. He'd play piano and I'd play guitar. And like, so that, like, it was an amazing community to grow up in and to kind of learn.
From the greats.
Yeah.
You know.
Both of you guys did.
That's
really awesome. What a similar kind of, like, it's great that you found each other because there's, like, I bet there was a lot of stuff you didn't even have to say. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's an unspoken connection that you guys have without even... That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it was definitely a neat way to come up. I mean...
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be the musician I was.
So you started... Did you start playing? Did you play like Fitzgerald's and all that stuff?
Man, I did a lot of blues gigs.
Okay,
like,
so
and not, you know, and you, what that means is, you know, not the coolest gigs. You know, you're playing a sports bar, doing a few sets, you know, stuff that, you know, we'd all like not do now or not want to do now. Knows,
yeah, not want to do, but to do sometimes. Yeah.
But no, and so I mean, I put a little trio together and, you know, had, you know, probably had a lot of covers, but, you know, would do gigs like that. And you know, so from a young age, you know, kind of had different rhythm section guys in and out and learn how to kind of keep a band together and keep a repertoire and like, and it was,
go ahead and finish your thought.
Oh no, it's funny thinking back just how that it's not too dissimilar from what we do now.
No, I mean, it's interesting that you set out on this path and it kind of, and it does change and things, there's more at stake sometimes than there is other times, but it definitely is like the same job I've had since I was like 14 or 15. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Essentially. Mm-hmm. So you had a dream to do something else and that's why you moved to LA? You got your parents to sign you out of school and you split?
I just felt this thing. So when I was 16, my folks, like, I mean, I was playing gigs already.
Yeah, you weren't interested in school.
And just kind of sleeping through school. I wasn't a bad kid. At that time, my parents were so supportive. I mean, aside from the occasional weekend getting drunk or smoking pot, I really didn't do anything destructive in high school because I had such a good deal with my parents.
Yeah,
it was fine.
Yeah.
And, so they signed me out and I kept gigging. And then I was offered my friend Rick Holmstrom, and he's now a Mavis Staples band leader.
Oh, wow.
But he had hipped me to this gig and was trying to get me like this. He was playing with a guy called Johnny Dyer, and he was trying to like, hey, you should book a tour with Johnny and you know, do these dates. I can't do them. And I tried to put my band together to do that, and you know, one of the guys couldn't travel, and at that point I just sort of hit a wall in Houston. Because there's... You know,
there's a wall you hit in Houston.
There's a wall
I lived
hit
there.
In Houston.
I was in that music scene.
And I was just like, well, this is, you know, there's a lot of musicians I like, but I can't, you know.
You can't get past a certain thing there.
Right.
It's not, I don't know why that happens there. Because I really like Houston.
And so it was just time for a change. And so my friend Rick kind of found me some gigs out in LA. And they were kind of more of the same, like blues gigs and bars. But, you know, you make a few hundred dollars a week, and you're keeping it afloat. And there's a, you know, a lot of people have moved to LA with far less on the books. So.
Yeah.
But didn't like Bill Bateman from the Blasters kind of discover you at like a blues bar, and he was like, holy crap, sure enough,
if you start playing and just immerse yourself in any scene, you can build community. And you know, like, what I guess what she was saying is like, so
how'd you get out of there?
At a sports bar in Whittier, California, I wound up like Bill Bateman from the Blasters wound up being the hired gun drummer that night. And we did this gig together, and you know, we hit it off, and he's like, then he hired me to play in the Red Devils. And like, so that got me moved from Long Beach into like the Hollywood scene.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, with Bill and Dave Alvin, and you know, and a lot of cool, you know, there was a lot of education that started right at that point.
That's great. So leaving high school was probably great for you.
Yeah.
It's probably absolutely. The best thing that could have
absolutely.
Happened.
Absolutely.
So how long were you out there?
5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, and I think my timeline's horrible. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, it's about 5 years.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I got to do some cool gigs, and, you know, nothing super huge, but I never worked a day job out there. I kept the bills paid, and
that's great.
And met a lot of people and learned a lot, and it served its purpose for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you let me ask you, where did you go when you left LA? You came here?
I did.
Okay.
There was a brief moment where I sort of
how come we never really met before? Don't you think that's weird?
I know,
well,
I've seen
heard
gigs
your name
too.
For years,
I
mean,
yeah.
And, like, just
we've probably been in the same room like
I bet
a
we
lot
have.
Of times.
Yeah. Well, now I'm embarrassed because I really like you guys.
Aww,
I was going to ask if I could go with you on tour, but I have stuff I have to do during that time, which sucks.
Well, maybe we'll do a show together sometime.
Yeah, that would be nice. Okay, so you came back here.
I came back, and it's funny, like, I got really out there, and, you know, something, you know, towards the tail end of my tenure in L.A., I got really out there, you know, so when I moved from my first digs in Long Beach to Hollywood and wound up, you know, on these cool gigs with this sort of faster scene, I sort of learned what to do in this business and what not to do. And I, you know, it's...
Are you sober now?
I am.
Okay.
I have been for over 15 years.
Okay.
And...
So the way you're talking, it's like a life you left behind. You know what I mean? Or not like, oh, I learned to not get totally wasted before I played.
Well, it's just funny. I mean, but there's some... I wouldn't trade it for anything. You know, I mean, I've made some really cool music and learned, you know, because so when you're this weird kid that listens to blues and country and folk records and, you know, and everyone else is listening to whatever, are you, and then you meet someone like Dave Alvin who's effortlessly,
yeah.
you know, American music. And it, yeah. it taught me so much. So there's that, you know, there's a pool and there's so many people I love out there. But yeah, but I also... was doing things I said I would never do, and it got me.
That's sad. You hit a bottom.
Yeah.
And you got out of it and cleaned yourself up. But was there like a rehab involved or something? And you just go like, hey, I can't do this anymore. Got it straight.
There wasn't. There was no money.
I bet that pisses people off when you say that. Some people spend a lot of money trying to get their lives together.
It's, you know, I came home at one point and visited my parents and basically had an overdose at their house. It was gnarly. And
that's rough, man.
It is. And I it's that's a regret. That's one of those things that you can only fix by just living right every day from now on. But so
that in some ways though you're closer to them having gone through that kind of thing. Is that right?
Well, I guess I know more about unconditional love because
yeah. Yeah.
You know,
they stood behind you when you were getting sober.
What's that?
They were obviously probably behind you getting sober.
Well,
and,
they
like,
were,
supportive.
But I guess the thing is so I had this overdose home, and then I went back out to Los Angeles, and then I just continued to drink myself into a stupor, you know.
Right.
And so I had, you know, there was a few more that, you know, there's a few more things that had to happen before I sobered up, and I waited till after I finally had really hit bottom. As if that wasn't bad
enough.
Right,
right.
I waited a couple months to tell him I was sober because I didn't want it to sound like a hollow promise, or I didn't want to bother them with it because I thought, well, you know, that was something that, you know, that was right in their face and super glaring, and I just wanted to get my shit together before troubling them with it.
Are you guys okay now?
We're great.
That's good.
We're great. And I wouldn't be the, you know, Eleanor and I are both, you know, sort of products of really supportive parents. You know, I wouldn't be the person I am or the musician.
I like to hear that. Yeah.
If it weren't for them.
Yeah, yeah, I think we're both very unusual in that way because, you know, most people's parents are, you know, kind of have a vision for their children, whether it's going to college or taking over the family business. And, you know, I think we're both really fortunate to have parents that really, you know, gave us this gift of, you know, supporting our music and like really encouraged us to do that with our lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think my dad has probably had some second thoughts over the years after my sister and I have had to borrow some money here and there, but, but, you know, they've been really great. And I think it's really exciting for them to see what we've done with our music careers. And, we're just really lucky.
Do you invite them up to shows? Like I saw you guys played the Paramount and you guys opened for Steve Earle and played with him. Do you invite them to shows like that?
Yeah. Oh, they call. Oh, you don't have to invite them.
Oh, they already know what's
going
on.
They're already working
on
the guest list.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, and we have these other people. Do you think they can come too?
Right. So cool, though.
Yeah,
that's a nice feeling.
They help us fill up the guest list as we travel around the country.
It's true. Oh, well, I've got a friend in Seattle. Do you think you could...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's a good... When they're doing that stuff, you know they're definitely, like, into it. I have a stepmom that does that stuff all the time. I got a friend that's in Houston. She wants to come to the House of Blues tonight. I'm like, all right. Then,
yeah.
And then, yeah. So, you did this new album with Jim Scott?
Mm-hmm. Did.
Wow, that's fucking awesome.
I know.
You did that in L.A.?
Yeah.
Tell me about it. What's it like working with Jim Scott?
He was, I mean, coming into it, like, I guess it was like last summer we were sitting with,
Did he mix the Accident, Steve's new record?
I don't think so. I haven't picked up the liner notes. I was actually, okay. I just listened to this, the You Guys Walking podcast.
Oh, yeah, good.
When I was running this morning, and I need to get the Accident. I meant to buy it at the merch booth because when I go to gigs, I don't want free records. I want to buy records.
Yeah,
and
me too.
And they already, because they were moving on to the next band, I forgot, so I'm going to buy it.
Right. It was really cool because he encouraged us to write more songs than we needed so that we had a big pile. So he wanted 20 songs to start with. And
Jim probably made so many, or was a part of so many Rick Rubin records where Rick was just like, that sounds great. Go write 20 more.
Or the right. Telephone.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he was, you know, part of the process even from before we got into the studio helping us.
Probably started last summer. I mean, around
yeah, I mean,
July.
We talked to him on the phone several times and, you know, he was really cool because he was like, no, I want to talk to Eleanor too. And, you know, he didn't just want to talk to the guy. And
that's good. Do you get any residual bullshit out there?
Oh, yeah, all the time. It's there's lots of that. You go into the guitar store and they're like, so, what are you looking for your boyfriend?
They
and,
really say
know,
that?
Yeah. People have really said that.
This day
yes.
and age, they don't.
It happens all the time.
That's so annoying.
Yeah. Or you play really good for a girl.
That's my least favorite. I'm in a band. Do you know Trish Murphy?
Oh, yeah.
I'm in a band. She's a fucking badass. And she plays Circles Around Me and sings Circles Around Me. And I can't stand it when, you know, some older jackass and they, oh man, she's pretty good for a girl. Like, pretty good for a girl, dude. She's fucking great for a human.
For a
like,
human,
anybody that's playing music.
Did you see the Nico case thing?
No.
Someone, there was a, check it out on like Twitter. Like Playboy had said something. You know, in Playboy's world, I'm sure it was a comment, but you know, something about me, like women in rock, or you know, or I forget what the. And then she wrote back, you know, like, don't Peggy Olson me, motherfucker. And then just started
going, oh, that's
she had
awesome.
Several
she's
tweets.
Like, I'm a musician playing music. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I'm not just a woman. But so, yeah, Jim was really great about just treating us both as equal members of the Mastersons. And
he was just so, you know, for a guy that's been a part of so many records that I'm a fan of, I mean, a huge fan of, he was just so calm and salt of the earth. And, you know, so it started last summer and we just started sending him songs from the road. So we wrote most of these 20 songs on the road.
And did you write them all together?
Mm-hmm. We did. There's only one song on the record that, that we didn't write together. Chris wrote it.
It was actually in the pile for Birds and it didn't, quite fit. And we were singing it one day, and Jen was like, "What's that?" You know.
Yeah, but it kind of fit with the rest of the tunes musically. So I think, and it also kind of works on the record. It's Anywhere But Here, and it's so many of the tunes are so pop and chord structure, and it is too. But it's the one track where it's a little more like chaotic, whereas the other ones are a little more like polished with strings and stuff. Yeah. And you know, that's like the tune that I play fiddle on, which is funny because I play a lot more fiddle, you know, on the last record. And those are my air quotes for those of you listening. On the last record and this record, there's a lot more string arrangements. So, that was an older song that came out. And,
but we just sort of put the songs, we let Jim really decide what the song list was going to be. I was thinking, well, here's our big chance to work with Jim Scott. So why don't we let him do his job and produce and
let him steer the boat?
You know, I mean, it was definitely collaborative, but I was like, what have we got to lose? Let's just write the best songs we can. And then we're going to let this guy pick from that list and we'll go make those.
Yeah.
When we got into the studio, we had a pretty short amount of time to make the record. We recorded and he mixed everything was done after 15 days. We had a small break for Thanksgiving in the middle to...
Where'd you record? In what studio?
At his studio, okay. Pliers in Valencia and near LA. And he had this amazing process where, like, you would go in with the band and you would, you know, track and, you know, he would offer some advice. Like, you know, he's always looking for the big note. He wanted to hear, like, the most, you know, not something like crazy, just something that was like perfect. He wanted to hear the right thing for the song, and everybody
could apply to anyone. That could be the drum fill, that could be whatever George was playing on the bass, that could be,
and George was a bass player on
George
the bass?
Came out and played bass.
So you know, he would give us some coaching along the way, and then when he felt like we got the track, he would just say, okay, great, go to the bar. And then he kept amazing meticulous notes. Like, he would have a lyric sheet and like basically a map of each line and where the bass take was on which, you know, which take was the best part on the bass and or the vocals or the guitar. And so, you know, he would be in there and we'd all go and relax for a little while, and then we would come back in and listen to, you know, he would do a little bit of, or his guy Kevin would do a little of editing, and then we'd come in and listen to the take. And it was really great just as an artist, because then you didn't come in and have to listen to, you know, five different takes.
Yeah,
and
then
try
you can't
you know, and then start melting down
numb.
Because
yeah.
No, and he's just so good at that. He might be like, man, you know, take three is when you guys were really singing right, but George was doing these things in take six, but then the drum fill, Mark started this thing at take seven. I mean, just the bird's eye view, or just the what he was able to do and keep in catalog, and you know, it was amazing. I've never worked with anyone quite.
I've always been an office. I got to meet him once with a friend of mine. You look like you could be like a stand-in double for him if he needed. Do you know who Fred Marr is? He's a producer and drummer guy.
I know the name.
Produced
but I don't...
like Matthew Sweet Girlfriend.
Okay.
And he
produced.
Love him.
He was working on a Matthew Sweet record that was like in the early 2000s with Jim Scott that they were doing together.
Cool.
And I think that's when I met him, when they were like, I went with him to go talk to him about shit.
And he's so, I mean, he's just so mellow. I mean,
it seems very mellow, very cool.
It's, I mean, we, it, well, the, so
very
the funny,
nice too. Like, he was very interested in just, you know, my friend's goofy little friend, you know what I mean?
Yep. No, and he like, you know, he'd hang out. We got to go out on a couple shows with he and his wife, Carol. And it's like, we were just all buds. It was so... so mellow, and he has such a calm demeanor. Like like Eleanor said, we had a, you know, pretty short time to make a really dense record, and we didn't have a single fight. This is really interesting, because it's pretty easy for us to, you know, get sideways about something. But
sure.
I mean, it was so.
I like that you're normal, though. I'm glad that you're open about that, because it would be shitty to walk around pretending that wasn't an actual thing and to act so surprised, like we didn't have a fight. Like that's
funny
a real thing.
Because
no,
like
crazy.
Maybe a week or two after we finished the record.
No, like a day or two after.
No, it was like a while, and we had our first fight in like a couple of weeks, and it was like, whoa, cool. Like, that's amazing that we made it that long without having an argument.
Did you say it in the middle of the fight? Was one of you like, hey, Dave, you noticed that this
we did.
Yeah, we did.
Kind of like that.
Lighten the mood a little bit.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. How, what, like, what, I have a question about this because you guys are a couple. What is your, what's your social life now? I mean, outside of you work, you hang out with the people you work with, like every musician.
We don't have much of a social life. Well, I mean, we have had a chance to go out a little bit while we've been home in Austin. We've got to hang with George and Reef, and we like to hang out with John D. Graham and Gretchen when we can. And
I love those people.
We've gone out and seen a few shows while we've been at home. So when we have a rare moment, you know, when we're actually home, and we'll go out and we'll see people. But I feel like, especially in preparation for this record, there's just always so much to do. Even when we have a team around us doing things, like, things just will slip through the cracks if we're not working. And so there's just not a lot of, you know, we spend a lot of time on answering emails and, you know.
It's funny, like, a lot of people, like, everyone thinks they want to be, like, touring like this or recording like this or going to Europe here or, you know, wishing they had this or that. And they always seem really surprised when you can't go out every night.
Right.
Oh, we got to advance the shows, and we got to book hotels. And you know, even just being home, it's like, well, okay, we got to clean our house, and we've got to take advantage of the, you know, bulk collection day, and we got to clean out the garage, and, like, you know.
It's
like, we got to. Real rock star stuff.
Yeah, rock star stuff.
Yeah.
My friend Alexandra lives in Travis Heights, and a couple of years ago, Robert Plant first moved here, she heard the garbage truck coming, and she remembered she didn't pull out her garbage, so she jumped up, she's like, fuck, so she ran out to try and pull it out before the garbage truck got there, and the garbage truck was pulling out, but behind the garbage truck was in a jean, in shorts and a t-shirt at like 7:30 in the morning was Robert Plant, carrying one more bag of garbage, saying, excuse me, sir, can you wait, you forgot one. Like, and I was like, that's the guy I want to meet. I want to meet that guy. The guy that, like, missed the garbage truck and is still the lead singer of Led Zeppelin, but, like, I got to get this garbage out of my house.
Yeah.
That's funny. Some people don't, it doesn't register, like, regular stuff to them. Like, people outside of the music business.
Robert Plant carried my luggage one time.
You're kidding me. Did you tell him to or ask him to? Hey, carry this.
No, he was just a perfect gentleman.
This festival in San Francisco and we were, like, all going, leaving. You know, it was, like, 10 or 11 in the morning, so the elevators were really crowded at the hotel. And, so Eleanor, like, we were trying to just go downstairs, and two, you know, elevators gone by, and there wasn't room for both of us and our luggage. So I was just, like, I finally was like, go down. I'll meet you down there. So I sent Eleanor down, and I have then, like, a guitar, a gig bag, a backpack, and a big suitcase. So then the next elevator comes, it opens up, and it was just, you know, Patty Griffin and Robert.
And
we know Patty a little bit. You know, I would call us good acquaintances.
Sure.
You know, not, you know, we get to be in this on shows together, but not, we're not particularly close. But Patty says hi, or we can both kind of nod.
Yeah,
and then Robert just looks at my bag and says, oh, let me get that. And I was just like, wow,
that is cool.
So I spent the whole, and then, you know, yeah.
Robert Plant is your valet.
Yeah. it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, super cool. There was another. What was that song called that you guys wrote with Steve that you played with the other night? That was unbelievable.
Closer to You.
That's on the album.
Mm-hmm. That's on the album.
It is.
It's on his album too.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, we went over to Lars' place and recorded it.
Steve's version.
Him too. Is it on The Accident or is it going to be on something else?
Well, I don't know. We don't have a copy of it, so we're going to have to get it. But. Yeah, it's going to be the single and the mm-hmm. emphasis track.
Yeah.
I think that's what
they call
it. Other
singles? Yeah, like what's the...
I don't fucking know.
Music business is so weird.
I don't know
what's going on anymore.
It's super weird.
It's confusing to me.
It's
us too.
Good.
Our label, New West Records, is going to make a video for it. And I guess it's the single because it's the video that they're going to try to get onto CMT Edge or something. So...
I think the way to look at this, you know, we're not in the outcomes business. Like,
that's,
you can get up.
That's awesome. I'm going to save that quote.
And it's, and believe me, I sit around and I worry, and I'm the guy, and I wake up at 2 a.m. panicked because this person didn't email back or this person didn't, you know, I mean, it's, it's terrifying sometimes because we all love what we do, and you probably have similar things. It's like, this isn't a 9-to-5 job that we can compartmentalize. This is like, we actually love this.
Yeah.
And so when something good happens, we cherish it. When something bad happens, we get all worried. But like, you know, when they selected that song, we're like, okay, well, we would have maybe picked something different, but we don't know how to sell records. We just make the song.
I'll tell you what, that song had an impact.
Awesome.
I don't know if it's because you guys were up there with Steven. There's this vibe that's just so cool, but that song was definitely like a home run feeling one.
Cool.
It's awesome. I mean, it's so funny. Like, Eleanor had that riff, you know, just a real, like, replacement sounding kind of riff, but it was on a tenor guitar. So she brought that to the table, and that was the second song we wrote with Steve in, like, an hour and a half. So that was almost like the bonus song. We wrote this other song called Highway One, which...
Neither one of us have recorded, but is also...
It's a really good song.
Is it a good song?
Yeah, it's... so that we spent the bulk of the time doing that. We were starting to get hungry, and then we were like... Eleanor started playing that riff, and it's like, oh, we should do that one, too. And he just started, I found a letter, and just started, like, freestyling, and then...
It kind of pissed me off, because he was just, like, writing... He was, like, just spouting out all these words so quick, and I was like, just wait a minute! Like, I want to say something, too! He was so fast. He was, like,
But we definitely, like...
He has such a unique energy. I can't believe it. Like, I can't believe that's a guy. I want to see what he's like when he wakes up and right before he falls asleep. I want to see that.
I think he must have to crash at some point.
We went out and, you know, he does like his pancakes and eggs after the gig. So after Strange Brew, we were the people that went with him for pancakes and eggs. And he was getting tired. We were like, oh, wow, it's almost his bedtime.
This is what it's like.
He's running out. You could tell he was just starting to flag. I mean, like, it's such a, like... Because I know that day that he saw all of us, you know, he went and had, like, breakfast with Bob, and then he met up with me and for lunch.
He came over to do your show. We walked around
the lake. Yeah.
And then he went back to see Bob, and he was calling me. He's like, do you want to go to Bob's? I don't know, but it's traffic. You know, maybe I can come get you, but rush hour is really bad. Maybe I should just go shower. I don't know, but I could go to Bob's. Oh, I'm not going to shower. I think I'm going to go. And then to do his gig, he gives it all.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Gig, you know, Billy Harvey came in the next day to do the show. And he was like, I've seen him so many times. That's the best I've ever seen him. That was the best I've ever seen. I mean, every time I see him, I'm just completely blown away by just the level of entertainment that you're getting for your dollar. It's way more than a dude with a guitar singing some songs. And his fucking songs are unbelievable. And even what was that soul song that he sang all in falsetto?
Oh, wow.
That was fucking amazing.
I hadn't heard that one.
I was making the hair on my arms stand up. I mean, he blows my mind. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, he really does. That's just sick. It's a sick person. And I'm glad he exposes it to everyone.
Yeah, no, and there's a lot to be learned. I mean, we've definitely, you know, it's funny. There's certain performers that have that kind of charismatic thing. Our buddy Chuck Prophet is like that too. You know,
he and I exchange tweets a lot. I think he's really funny. I want him to come on the show, but he's never here when he's
show.
Yeah.
But there's this thing, and we do, like, you know, when we play gigs now, it's sort of a modular thing. I mean, sometimes we get to have a band with us, like we're doing Stubbs in July for our record release, and sure, there'll be a band and it'll be loud, but a lot of times it's the two of us, and then you're left with, like, okay, how do we make a connection with as many people in this room as we can? And oftentimes it's like, it's not just playing the song from your record perfect. You know, it's what you say before
it's
and after that song.
Yeah.
It's making them laugh you know, just having some kind of...
You can make someone laugh and cry in the same, you know, 30 or 40 minute set. And that's like, that's our reality now. Like being, I mean, we've both been in the business for a long time, but for our endeavors, we're a baby band. And if you're going to go introduce yourself to someone, it's like, you've got to figure out how to do that in a really short amount of time. And sometimes it's the bits, and it's not necessarily the song that, you know,
people remember.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have to tell you, I think that you're both, like, amazingly talented, and you play with such, the word I want to use is class. Like, what you guys play is very classy. Like,
Thank
it's
you.
Extremely, professional, but not in a way where it's cold. There's just class. There's character in the way you guys play. There's so much in the way you sing. Your harmonies are so beautiful. Do people ever? What was that band? Why am I drawing a blank on them? They remind. Do you guys ever like the? Your harmonies sometimes reminded me of the Jayhawks.
Yeah,
in the best way possible.
Yeah, no.
The switching from low to high harmonies and that you do and I think stuff like that I think is really cool. And they cross singing unison and splitting apart and all that shit was just gorgeous.
And there's going to be a lot more of it on the new record. I mean, we were just learning that. I mean, you know, when we made Birds,
Birds is an incredible album. People should get that for sure. I mean, it really is. It's great.
But it's funny how it's evolved. I mean, because then you put out a record like that and then you just go sing it on 100 radio stations and hundreds of gigs and how different we sing those songs now. Like even the new songs, like we sing them different than when we made them. Yeah. I mean, just once I get some shows, but yeah, I mean, I think we have a lot that we draw from. I mean, like I love Ray Davies as much as I love Ray Price.
Yeah.
Like,
you definitely, I mean, I can tell with you just because you're playing guitar that you're coming from a place that's crossed with tradition and rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that.
And it's neat. It's like, so when you get to go travel and sing these songs for different people, they get different things. Like when we're in the UK, like doing these duo folk gigs, you know, everyone's like, oh, you know, great folk artists, the Mastersons. And then you go to Spain and they hear a song like Crash Test on the first record and they call it power pop. And
right.
Like Spain was, at when we learned when we were over there, it was like the second biggest market for the Jayhawks or for Matthew Sweet.
Yeah.
So, we've done some shows with Matthew and like, so then there's people like, oh, Masters is power pop. And then in Australia, they call it all country, anything that's not like on mainstream radio. And we're like, we're not really country.
No,
but
you can see,
but you know what? We are Southern.
Yeah.
You know, I was born south of I-10 and there's a fiddle in the band. So like it's there. And I think, you know, so many artists or young artists now, like we live in a world where everything is immediately referenceable. And I think that awareness is maybe not the best thing because all my heroes didn't have YouTube where they could reference it, you know.
Yeah.
Like, we just make the kind of music if we write a song that sounds too twangy, we put a real pop string arrangement on it.
Right.
If we write something that's too poppy, we figure out, well, we'll strip this one back and take it.
Put a fiddle on it.
Yeah, put a fiddle on it. You know, it's, you know, it's like, how can we turn it on its ear?
Put and a just fiddle make on it. It's, yeah. So people can find out where you're going to be on this tour with Steve Earle at themastersonsmusic.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty comprehensive website. I enjoyed my time there.
Yeah, we're doing the thing with Steve, and we're out and about just...
other Steve Earle.
Steve Earle.
We're out and about with him, but we're, you know, some Texas shows in the summer, and then we're going out with Justin Curry from Delamitri later this year.
Oh, is that the singer guy?
Mm-hmm.
That's a power pop guy?
Yeah.
We're
looking forward to that. So we'll be kind of going across the country on that tour, and then we go to Europe, and for the record will come out there in the fall.
You're going to be, and you said you're going to be here again in July doing your record release?
July 19th.
At Stubbs.
Okay. I think this will come out like either the week before your record comes out or the day your record comes out, because I put out my show on Tuesdays and so do records. Is there anything I'm missing? I want you guys to hang out more. I'm trying to figure out
a way
to
do it. I've got this
other guy's tease. Okay. I love the music. You guys would come back some other time, and maybe now we're friends. I have your number, so I'll call you every once in a while.
Absolutely.
Anytime.
Hey, Chris. What are you guys doing?
That's how we met Steve, though. It's this is, you know, as hard as it can be, and, you know, this is a robust life that we all get to live. You know, it's like, I mean, it's like we met Steve a year ago, and now, Poults.
Yeah.
Not Earl. known him a long time, but like now he's like one of our favorite people, and like we're pretty damn close, and it's and I'm sure that same could be said of this. Or it's just funny, like if you just put yourself out there, and that's why I'm not in the outcomes business. I just get out of bed and put my boots on and do the best I can do every day.
That's the only way you can get through it. That's the only way, because if you were in the outcomes business, this would literally, you would have to get out of this, because if any of us, if our careers were actually a shoe store, we'd all have to close them down pretty much. Most of us.
Absolutely.
Not the Bob Schneiders, but I mean, a lot of people would have to close their businesses.
Right,
down.
Absolutely. And it's really easy to, you know, to to stress. Anytime I start to get way out and on a limb, you know, I realize that I'm trying to think about and worry about things that I can't control. Like,
right.
We don't know how
exactly
how, you know, what's going to happen with this next record. Is someone going to review it here and then that gives it legs, or maybe no one, you know, maybe yeah. Maybe this isn't the record for us. You know, maybe that's something to reconcile, you know. It's like, I don't know. We'll just keep creating.
Yeah. And that's what I like about you guys. You definitely have, I mean, I've only seen you a couple of times with Steve, but it's left an impact on me. So it must be something. And I love your albums. Or yeah, I love your first album, Birds Fly South.
We'll get you the new one.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anything that I'm missing?
I don't think so.
I really like you guys.
I would like to wish happy birthday to
Eleanor Whitmore.
Not to myself, but to Johnny Two Bags. And
Levon Helm's birthday.
Levon
is today.
Chris Feinstein, who's also passed. Let's see, who am I missing? Miles Davis's birthday.
Miles Davis's
today.
Birthday.
Stevie Nicks.
That's a good one.
Jeez, God, there's a lot of people's birthday today.
Yeah, I think Jack Kevorkian.
There's a few years ago when we
that's
lived
a memorable
in
character.
When we lived
oh,
in New
Keith
York,
Keith Gaddis.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Another great guitarist. When we lived in New York. We got to make some music with Levon, and
did you go up to that thing, like the barn thing?
We played the Masters. We played one of the last Rambles, but I got to make a record with him. And but there was one time when, you know, it was Levon's 70th birthday, right? Was it 70?
Yeah, and I said happy birthday, Levon. I said, did you know that we had the same birthday? And he was like, oh, that's awesome. And he was like, you know, there's four of us, don't you? Because we're both Geminis. So,
that's pretty cool. Do you pay attention to astrology?
Not too much, but I think there's definitely some of the Gemini qualities in myself.
Yeah.
I have another personality that surfaces from time to time.
I think people
like
pay
a
attention
fiery
to
red-haired?
It's the fiery.
Girl. Yeah, yeah.
I'm usually pretty reserved, but that fiery thing comes out sometimes.
There is a fire. I've seen that. I had a Libra red-haired artist girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of emotion can come up with
yeah.
that. Outside of the Libra, just the artist and redhead. Seems like, doesn't it? Is that my right?
Yeah, I think so.
Is it Tom Robbins who said that they seem like they come from outer space?
What, redheads?
Yeah, that they're not like normal people. They don't.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. There's something different.
That's cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys for coming out. Your new album, Good Luck Charm, is released on New West Records on June 17th. June 17th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, congratulations. Thanks for having me. Or thanks for coming. Mastersons from their album Good Luck Charm comes out today, Tuesday, July 8th, 2014. They are such nice people. They are so incredibly talented, and I absolutely love this album. He sent me a link to download it a few weeks ago, and I have listened to it about three or four times a week, and I was obsessed with the song Uniform coming back from a trip a couple weeks ago, just listening to it over and over again. Fantastic. I love them. Get out there. Buy this album. I want to thank Steve Poltz for putting us together. And thanks, Steve Poltz, for everything, actually. Thanks for putting us together, okay, for booking this show. Steve Poltz, show booker. Don't forget to like our Facebook page. Do not forget to follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Also, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, and you will get it delivered to you every Tuesday, every Friday in your iTunes podcast situation. Okay? Thank you so much. Thank you to the Mastersons. Thank you to Steve Poltz. I love this album. Please go out and get it. Let's hear some more music from it. Let's get down.
Don't it make you sad? Rhetoric and politicians make me mad, and I can't take it any longer. I can't close my eyes. Doesn't stop the tears from falling. Truth be told, it's a long road, and I don't know where